Millions of women suffer from imposter syndrome, and some don't even know it. And that's why, in today's episode, Sadie Rodriguez will tell us about how you too can overcome imposter syndrome and leverage it to better your life. Sadie Rodriguez is a physician, speaker, and coach helping high-achieving women move from performance to presence. And after more than a decade of elite medical training, she found herself at a personal crossroads, outward success paired with a quiet ache for deeper meaning and self-trust. And what began as her own reckoning with imposter syndrome became an initiation into a different way of living and leading, one rooted not in proving, but in wholeness. So, Sadie, tell us about what is imposter syndrome and how can a woman leverage it to better her life?
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.
Yes. Hi, Lily. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to sit with you and spend time with you and talk about something that is close to my heart. And as you mentioned, a lot of people go through and navigate in different periods of their life or in different pathways. It doesn't have to always be career. It could be new motherhood. It could be new friendships. So I think that, yeah, it's hopefully a beautiful contemplation we can give. Imposter syndrome, some people might challenge that even terminology to say imposter thoughts. But regardless of how you call it, it is a set of beliefs that even though on paper you are qualified, you are capable of doing the task in front of you, whether that's motherhood or your career, you internally don't feel like you can do it, don't feel that you belong, or you feel like you are an imposter, a fake, a fraud at doing it. And I think that it can have a variety of experiences. Not every person has the same underlying belief underneath it. For some people, it might be more rooted in their lack of confidence. And other people, it might be more rooted in their lack of worthiness. And other people, it might be their lack of belonging. So I think it's a very broad word and term that we throw around as if it's the same experience for everyone. And I think that the invitation for each person is to really explore what it means to them. What do they believe about their circumstance and about themselves, to start having that inner dialogue and inner wisdom to give little clues of what are the gifts in it for them that then, as you were saying, can leverage the situation into a relationship with self that is more rooted in self-trust or self-worth or belonging or whatever they might experience that imposter syndrome or thoughts to hold for them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Millions of women feel that they are perhaps frauds or they are not really who they claim to be, although on the surface, they are successful, they are beautiful, they are achieving in so many aspects of their life, and somehow they feel like a fraud. Why would you say this happens? Why do high-achieving women feel like a fraud?
Yeah, I think that's another, it's a beautiful question, Lily. And I think another one that probably is pretty nuanced depending on the person. I think in my contemplations and conversations with women and men, this is not isolated to women only, so to be inclusive of other identifying peoples. But I think that one thing we can be curious about is this sort of need for validation. That, as you're saying, if we can get the certification, if we can get the title, if we can get the job, if we can get the lover, if we can get the car, the et cetera, that somehow in attaining those things, we not only have proof, okay, that we're capable on the outside, but somehow we believe that those will help us feel internally that we are capable of doing it, worthy of doing it, et cetera. And I think that is the piece that is rich for contemplation and invitation, because I believe that those questions are really the inner game of being a human. We all will face self-doubt, self-judgment, self-fear, no matter if you're at a highly prestigious workplace or if you're, you know, what society would say wouldn't be highly prestigious. It doesn't take away the human experience. It just gives us a context through which to talk about this. But I think that part of the reason we feel like a fraud, let's say, is because we believe that these external markers are going to transform our internal reality, our internal feelings about ourselves. And I think that's the beautiful part where we can have this relationship with ourself outside of these markers, or even despite of them or with them, that leads to this inner curiosity, inner awareness, inner validation of who we are, not just based on what we can do, but what we believe about ourselves. Does that make sense?
Yes. One funny fact is that I have imposter syndrome. And one interesting thing about that is that I run 5 podcasts. I speak around the world. And I have a 6th podcast that I haven't started yet, which is about being iconic. And I think for a year and a half, one excuse that I had was, I have sore throat. And, you know, me running the podcast is just like me starting towards that, but I couldn't kind of like get myself to do it. And on the back end, my other excuse was actually, I don't know enough. Like, and although I have this thing about, okay, I don't know enough, that's like the core thing that I'm teaching. And it's like, it feels so stupid that I have this belief about myself. And then I kind of started recently to just write small things that kind of come to mind, you know, about what I could cover in that, you know, Be Iconic podcast. And one of them was like, how do you go from feeling inadequate to feeling like a superstar, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those things are things that millions of people want to know the answer to, and to be like transformed by that idea. And yet you can say, for the most part, I'm thinking, no, nobody will care about that. Like, I don't know enough, you know? So I'm wondering about, like, why does someone who is like ultra competent, why does someone like that feel that perhaps they don't know enough? Like, for example, in my case, I think I know where it stems from, which is that when I was younger, my grandma used to beat me, and she used to say that I'm ugly and stupid and fat. And whenever I got a 9 out of 10, you know, she would say, oh, that's not enough. And when I graduated with 9.81 out of 10, she said, it's not enough. And why didn't I get 10? She was very upset and she beat me. And so I think that I haven't healed that yet. So it's like still in the background of like, you don't know enough, whatever you do, if it's not perfect, it's not enough. So like, why do high achievers feel like they are not enough? Is it because they've also had like a story like mine, not necessarily exactly like mine, but a story where someone told them, you're not enough, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not beautiful enough. And because of that, they're framing everything they do for this lens of, I'm not perfect.
Yeah. Well, firstly, Lily, thank you for sharing your story with us. I think that so many people, like you said, it might not be the same story, but can resonate with stories that they were told about who they are by the outside world. And I think that's such an important piece that you bring forward. And also your podcast idea is amazing. Absolutely, you should do it. You are iconic, Lily. How many people have 5 podcasts and could go on to do 6? I mean, most people, their podcasts quit within 10 episodes or something. I can't remember the exact statistic. But I think there's several things I want to respond to that you mentioned. I think you have a lot of insight in reflecting upon stories of self and our self-concept. Our self-concept is something that we form at quite a young age. Some people would debate the age of 7 and beyond is when you become conscious. Some people say as young as 4. And exactly what you're saying, we, most of us, I would say, are unaware or unconscious to these stories of self. And where do we get them from? We get them from our families. We get them from school, from our society, from any society, you know, cultural, religious teachings, reflections back to us. And so without challenging them or being awake to them, we the default is, I think, to absorb these unconscious stories of ourselves. And the brain loves the known. It doesn't like ambiguity. And we have over 200 biases. So our brain's job, it gets so much data that it has to process it even before we have a chance to become aware of it. And then on top of that, how often are we actually awake and aware and observing our own thoughts? That's not, in this culture, in this day and age, something that a lot of us are taught to do. And so that leaves us at, you know, the unconscious programming, I guess I should say, that we've inherited. And I lost my train of thought, Lily. I wanted to go somewhere with this. Is that what our right, our unconscious bias and belief about who we are then informs the way that we see our lives? And because our brain always looks at evidence, which is usually the past, I was told I wasn't good at this thing, and I have all these years of evidence that I'm not good at this thing, then of course I'm going to believe it. It's harder for us to imagine the possibility in something because there is no evidence to support it. And that's also how we are taught to see, like, confidence should come from mastering a task, for example. So if you, I've never, let's say before you started all these podcasts, you might have thought, I'm not going to be good at this because I've never done it. Your brain had no evidence to go back to say, I know how to get the technology. I know how to post. I know how to edit. And it might have been harder for you to believe back then when you didn't have the evidence that you would be successful at podcasts. And now fast forward to five, and some of those beliefs might have changed because now you have evidence to support the belief of who you are. But before I go on to say anything else, I want to put words to this because we are so powerful and our brains are so powerful. And the power is when we're awake to it, to allow ourselves to decide who we believe we are, who we think we are. And it might be true that I'm not as fast as this person, my grades aren't as good as this person, etc. And how can I create space between the circumstance and my automatic response to have curiosity, to hold two things to be true at once? Okay, I'm not good at this yet. You know, I'm not good at this. And I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to try. I'm willing to not define myself by the lack of evidence, by my failure. But I'm willing to know that I am whole just as I am. And all of this is just expressions of ourselves. You had mentioned the doingness, and I wanted to respond to that too, because I think as a culture, this is my interpretation, and I would love to also know if this resonates with you, but I think we're often rewarded for the things that we can do. Can you make a 10 out of 10 grade? Can you look a certain way, be a certain weight, have a certain thing, and it's all external? And we use those validating markers as who we are. But I think they're two different things. I think that we are hopefully coming into this age where we're having these conversations and we're realizing that, yes, the doing is valuable for our society to have contributions, but the beingness, the intangibles of that idea that you have, the way that you, you know, connect with people and the contemplations that you have is just as valuable as the external things that we can measure. But that again takes conscious effort of deconstructing what has society taught me about what's most valuable about me, my appearance, my weight, my circumstances, and what do I believe? And how can I nurture that internal sense of wholeness and self-worth? And then it's not that I have to relax my standards. It's not that I have to be easy on myself, because I think a lot of people have this misconception that if I'm compassionate and kind with myself, I won't be excellent. I won't push to do more. The opposite is true. There's a wonderful body of research by Dr. Krista Neff that talks about self-compassion, and all of the people that have self-compassion actually are able to achieve so much more. They have this loving relationship with themselves that is sustainable and allows them to take more risks because it's internally rooted and holistic. And I think if we can do those couple of things as the foreground, is get curious about, okay, you know, in my childhood, I was told to be these things and I'm not. And I can observe that. I can give myself the choice to decide differently. Then that's where our power comes from, our agency, that we're not at the whim of the world telling us who we are, but we're making space for us to have a voice, for our beliefs to be seen and heard, and to choose again and to choose differently. And I want to pause there. See if any of that resonates with you, or I don't think that I fully answered your question, but before I go on more tangents,
I want to ask you, how can someone leverage knowing that they have imposter syndrome and mm-hmm. to turn it around and to make it into something beautiful? Because, yeah. For example, like for every like negative side, there's also the positive side. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking, okay, because I have imposter syndrome, I am always trying to be amazing at everything. And let's say if someone was to ask me to paint their house, I know I would like work, you know, I would be like almost all day there and I wouldn't have to even eat. because I'm like so committed to the task. I'm so committed to being excellent. So like the positive side is that like I'm always creating excellent things because I'm always thinking I'm not enough. And the result for other people is incredible, right? So there's always like that positive side. And because I have this imposter syndrome, because of that, I'm a people pleaser. And because I'm a people pleaser, again, I make people feel amazing because I mean, I'm trying to please people. And because of that, I give them an amazing experience all of the time. Right. So there's always like the positive side of looking at things. And I'm wondering, what can someone do to turn that imposter syndrome into like a way to like accept themselves, but also see the positive side of it?
Yeah, I think you mentioned that so beautifully. Yes, there is always duality to life. And I think that we talk about imposter syndrome as if it is this horrible, uncomfortable, awful thing. And we limit ourselves and how open we are into receiving information to us. I think that life is always talking back to us, just as you're saying. And I think that we see the world through our wounds. Like, you know, so me and you, for example, have these maybe opportunities to see ourselves for more internal validation, to see our worth despite the circumstances. And someone else might not have that at all. And so life is in this randomness of life. If someone else got a 9 out of 10 on their score, it wouldn't bother them at all. But for someone like me and you, because we see the world through our wounds and through the lessons we came here to learn, then it speaks to us a little louder. So I think that knowing that life is always giving us information helps me reframe that nothing has gone wrong, that nothing is bad about the situation or this thing, but there's always an opportunity for my growth. But that again goes back to being aware of the situation, having like observing the thought, observing the circumstance and not believing my story about it and creating that space. I think Viktor Frankl has that famous quote, between stimulus and response, there is space. And in that space, lies our choice, and that gives us our freedom and growth. I'm probably messing it up slightly, but going back to saying, okay, this belief is neutral. What do I want to make of it is already so much more empowering than saying, I have to fix this about me. This is wrong about me. How come no one else has this? And I think that a lot of us, I always remind myself that we came here to be human, and there's nothing we can do to escape this human experience. So even if I were to get a 10 out of 10 on that grade, even if I were to paint that house perfectly, that, sure, maybe that feels good in the moment, but it doesn't erase the other parts of being human. It doesn't erase maybe the internal anxiety I have. Are they going to like this house? Is this person going to approve of me? It's like such a fleeting dopamine hit of like, yes. And then the next thing comes of the next day, the next task, et cetera. And I think the same is true with imposter syndrome. I don't think it's something that we need to fix because we are not someone that needs to be fixed. I think that it's just there to speak back to us about what is inviting us to be seen with more compassion and growth. As you were saying, you know, reflecting on that being a part of your healing journey, that what if instead of running from the imposter or trying to fix the imposter or hide the imposter, we looked at her as part of us that needs to be seen or needs to be held or needs to tell us something, and we had compassion to her or him and invited them to be part of our guide on this journey? What else can I learn about myself? That's so interesting. Why am I wanting to please this person? What do I believe will happen if they disapprove of me? Okay, they won't like me. I'll be othered. Okay, can I have some compassion that our most primal instinct is belonging? So, okay, there's nothing that has gone wrong with me. My biology is to be belonged. Okay, but that's still like, I still am struggling with this. What if they disapprove of me? Okay, where is the opportunity for me to form the relationship with myself that can be not only accepting of this, but open to how I want to show up, even when I'm being othered or disapproved of? Now what? I think is one of the most powerful things we can say, like, okay, if I don't hit this on the mark perfectly, now what? And it leaves you with a lot more, it helps you reframe the problem. This is not a problem to be fixed, right? Like, we can't erase our problems in life. We can't erase our discomfort and our pains in life. So I think we have extra suffering in trying to fix them. And if we can just relax into, okay, this is a part of my story. How do I want to tell this when the story is over, when this chapter is over? How do I want to look back in 10 years and 20 years and say, man, you know what? Despite that imposter, I made the most iconic sixth podcast, and it was insane, and it blew up all the others. And like you're saying, it was because I did it with the imposter. If I'm waiting to be perfect to do it, I'm never going to do it, because what is perfect? It's defined by all these people and all these things outside of me. And is that really the point anyways? Or is it the point to make impact? And I think when we can also do that and shift from like the ego story to the service of it, like I bet, you know, if you're looking at that podcast thinking like, I'm not iconic enough, I don't know what to do enough, we'll always have this kind of deficit mindset. But we can hold that duality in space for like, yeah, but the woman in front of me is iconic and I need her to know that. And even despite me not feeling ready, what? Now I'm still going to decide to do it because this is for her. This is for her belief, for her becoming or his. Then it's like there's movement there. And I think the beautiful reciprocal thing in that is that by you accepting those parts of you and doing it anyways and bringing her with you, bringing the imposter with us, it actually then does create what the world then later will measure and say, holy smokes, she, you know, has this top ranking podcast. She's iconic. She's all over the world. She's a global speaker. And it's not that you're doing it to get those things. It's that you're doing it with the imposter anyways. You're doing it from your heart, from your spirit. And those are byproducts of who you're becoming. You're not, you know what I'm saying? Like, instead of waiting to feel confident to do something, we're pulling on the confidence from within, doing it anyway, and then gaining that external confidence as we go. There's a difference. I mean, this is an adjacent conversation, but I think it's related about confidence. I think for a lot of women, the imposter, you're waiting to feel confident. And so often we think that attaining these outside things will make us feel a certain way. And we bend over backwards and we people please, and we do all these things believing we're going to feel a certain way. But the liberating thing is that those emotions are with us despite the circumstances. We meaning, because we're meaning making machines, and cognitive behavioral therapy will tell us that the circumstances are just neutral. But I have the power, I have the ability, I have the meaning, the depth to generate my safety inside despite me not seeing that in the circumstances or the confidence. But that's something we have to be really awake and aware to, because the same way we were talking about having all these external markers to feel ready, it's the same with confidence. You know, people will say, fake it till you make it, or you don't feel confident doing something until you have that past evidence that you've done it. So something you've done 1,000 times, it's called task mastery. You have mastered the task, so your brain has the evidence, so now you believe that you're confident. But you can generate that belief even while you don't have the evidence. And that is just self-confidence. That's the ability to say, I'm willing to feel anything. I'm willing to be scared and go ahead and get my cover art for this icon podcast. You know, I'm willing to be scared and go ahead and put out a trailer. And then confidence comes flooding forward because you've already dealt with the fear. You've already dealt with the doubt, with the judgment of what if people don't like it? What if I can't do it? It's like, I don't have to erase it. I can just accept it. Yes, I am scared because this is scary. Yes, people are going to judge me because they're going to judge. And now what? I still want to do it. Then everything is available to you. You know, then you're like unstoppable because you've already accepted and processed that that is there. It is a risk. And I'm still willing to go forward. Then you have all the momentum behind you, despite never having done it before. And I think that's the part where sometimes we get tripped up on because we believe it has to look a certain way when it doesn't have to at all. And in fact, exactly as you're saying, it can look a certain way and you still feel really empty. So that's the invitation to go inward and say, why am I making it mean that if I can only have this person's approval and this title and this rank, that then I'm allowing myself to feel confident? Can I go ahead and feel confident as I'm doing it? Can I allow the action of me doing it and being scared be the confirmation that, holy smokes, I am courageous, I am heart-led, I am brave, even if no one else can see it and it's invisible.
Thank you. How does someone get the courage to act on their want, on their mission, if they don't feel like they are what they are claiming to be? For example, let's say with this Be Iconic podcast, you can say a third excuse that I is I'm not iconic enough yet.
Yeah. I mean, I would just sit and ask you, like, where do you believe that you are iconic and start exploring that?
And I am a red dress diva. Okay. Because I'm always wearing red everywhere and people remember me for that. And like very, very occasionally, if I'm like doing sports or something, let's say if I'm going upstairs to swim or something, maybe I'll sometimes wear black. And when I wear black, people are like shocked, like what happened to your red outfit, you know? So, and then I'm unforgettable in every interaction because I make people feel good and I'm very funny. So I mean, I feel iconic, but at the same time, I feel like, okay, I'm iconic, but I'm not quite a superstar at the moment. I'm not like followed by millions of people, you know, but I find that wherever I go in the world, people love me. Like, I have this effect on people because I'm just very nice and I'm kind and I make people laugh and they don't have to be anyone for me to like them.
Yeah. And I think even in your response has a lot of beautiful nuggets that like you could contemplate more. Like what's the difference between, you said, I feel iconic, but I'm not a superstar. Like we could explore more. What's the difference between the two?
Yeah. Like someone who touches the lives of millions of people and I'm not quite there.
So like we could contemplate that, you know, if you touched my life today, would we like, yes, there is power in quantity. But what about just the belief in that one person at the pool who remembered you, in this conversation that you're having on me, that you will always stay with me, on the people that know you as the red dress diva? You know, benchmarks are helpful to help us measure things over time. But where are they also limiting us from believing and seeing your full impact, your full like magic, your full sass? You know, if we're waiting to feel like we are that until you hit, let's just make up a number, like 2 million followers, what's going to happen at 1.5 million? And what's really the difference? You know, it's like, it's just our beliefs about it. Can I believe that I am full magic, woo, to this one person in front of me and allow my fullest expression to come out, even though it's not the 2 million yet? Because I think the other question is like, of 8 billion people in the world, is it more important that people, you were talking about people that don't forget you, that you make them happy. Like if it was just a numbers game, for example, it's like, would you rather have 2 million people who like, they just kind of scroll by and it's not really impactful, or 200,000 people, but they're like hanging on to every word that you said and you have changed their life and now they wear red lipstick because of you and now they allow themselves to be a little louder and shinier and brighter. You know what I mean? So I think it's also being aware of like, what am I measuring and why? What do I believe is in that measurement? And is that really reflecting? Like, is that really the best measurement for me? Maybe right now it is how many people dress a little bolder? How many people ask a question when they're not ready because they were inspired by how I show up, by me believing I'm an icon, even when the world doesn't reflect it back to me. I don't need them to reflect it back to me. I can say, I am Lily. I am the red dress diva. I am magic on legs. I am, you know, and look, I changed the person right next to me. And that is just as meaningful as changing 100,000. And I know it will grow there. And while I'm not saying that you should lower your goals, keep them high. That's how we grow. And what I am saying is don't miss the moment of now. Don't miss the person of now. Don't allow that belief that when I get there, I can fully be unleashed. Be unleashed in the version as you grow towards that. Do you know what I mean? Like you can still have both.
Thank you. The fourth excuse I have.
Okay, I love it.
That, you know, like at the moment, I am not posting anything of mine. Like I am uplifting the people that I interview, but I don't post anything that I believe. Like even if, let's say, even in my podcasting, I speak very little, you may notice, and I allow everyone to speak and I uplift everyone. And that actually has a reason, which is that first, I actually have sore throat. And for a long time, it's been really difficult to speak. And my voice is getting a lot better. So for the last few days, I've been able to speak, you know, a lot easier. And that's why I'm thinking I could actually start this podcast, you know, the sixth one. But secondly, it's like, I'm not being authentic online. And what I mean by that, like, I'm not showing up. I'm not talking about anything. I'm not posting about myself. So literally, I'm not known as me. A lot of it is, I think I'm still scared to show up and to still scared to kind of show the world the real me, which is funny and exciting. And it's ridiculous that you wouldn't want to show the world your exciting, fun side. But I think it's almost like, I feel like I won't be accepted.
Yeah, I think that's such a common thing. And that, before I dive into that one, I just want to explore with you like another belief about I'm not seen, not the one speaking up as much. You know who I thought of was Oprah. That woman is one of the most influential people of history, one of the richest women in the world, one of the most globally impactful women. And she also was a host. She asked the questions. But, and I think, like, how are we limiting how you show up or believing that you're connectable and authentic because of your title, your role? You know, is it possible that, like, actually, you are the through line in every interview? You are the wisdom keeper in every interview. You are the one who chooses the guests, the topics. You hold the conversation. You bring your values and your sparkle in every single one. Like, how is there room to play with those beliefs that, again, are maybe right now we're measuring by word count, but like are could be measured so many other intangible ways. You know what I mean? And like maybe people, the guests are like hit or miss, but they love you, Lily. They love the way you ask questions. They love the way you think about life. They love the way that you like consistently show up. I mean, we don't know how many followers are here because of you, not because of the guests. You know what I mean? Like that could be another really interesting thing to contemplate. But I want to return back to your other comment, which now is escaping me. What were we talking about just before this?
So like how I'm scared to be accepted.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's, a super common, again, primal belief, like the need to be in a tribe, the fear to be othered, you know, was our survival back in the day. If we were separate from the tribe, we wouldn't, our chances were low. And I think, I don't know, for me, and you tell me what you think, so we can elevate your voice as well on here, because it's important. But I think this is another one where I just think of think there's nothing wrong with this human experience. There is nothing, like my judgment of it makes me suffer more. Like, yes, it's scary to be othered. Yes. So I can just be scared. I don't have to fix that I'm scared. I can just be scared. And then I get to choose, okay, if you're scared, if you're scared, you can choose not to do it. Or if you're scared, you can choose to do it. The only thing that I would say is choose, like, back up the choice that you like. Like, for example, there might be a season, I'll give you my own example. I wanted to start this coaching space publicly 5 years ago, and I did not have the internal safety to also be seen. I was so terrified, Lily, of being judged, of being misunderstood. And I decided that I wanted safety and peace and be in the cave more than I wanted to go outside of the cave. And they both have their pluses and minuses. Being in the cave has its plus and minus. Going outside of the cave has its plus and minus. But if I could make the decision from love and support and have my own back, then I was going to have peace. And then the day came where I said, you know, I'm still scared that people are going to judge me. And I feel ready to like be with that fear and let that fear grow because there's something else inside of me that wants to grow more. And I think this is going back to the other conversation about impact, where things like purpose that are bigger than the fear can pull you through it, you know, because we're not ever going to be able to erase the fear of being human, the fear of being othered, the fear of not belonging. But if you believe in that woman so much on the other side of the screen who needs you, needs Lily's voice to say, I believe in you, you are an icon, then that is going to allow you to redirect the fear, to hold the fear without having to erase it. But it gives you something, some place to put it. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Tell us about how you turned your own imposter syndrome around into a positive thing.
Yeah. Honestly, it was sort of like one of those happy accidents. This was back in 2019. I had finished 12 years of training and I was terrified to be taking care of critically ill children on my own, as you know, having graduated. And I just didn't think that I was as capable. I was terrified of hurting a child or making a mistake. I didn't feel I belonged. I didn't feel like all the things that we were talking about. And it was really emotionally taxing. And I was really anxious and shut down, to be honest. And I didn't cope with it. I didn't have the tools or the vocabulary that I do today. And honestly, I just numbed out. I couldn't take it. I just really became like a shell of myself. And that became a gift because I kind of just was like, have you ever felt like you're like watching your life instead of living your life?
No.
Never. Okay. Well, that's the place I was in. I don't know if anyone else can relate to it, but it was like things were so heavy and I was so disconnected from myself that I kind of just felt like things were happening around me and to me, but I wasn't really inside of myself. I don't know a way to, maybe if anyone has had like a subclinical depression or depression, I don't know if they could resonate or you have, yeah,
I'm not
it
sure
just
about the
felt,
clinical part of it. I was just impressed, but I'm not sure about the.
and it just feels like you're just not yourself. It gave the numbing out probably wasn't the healthiest way to deal with it, Lily, but it did give me the gift that I could kind of dissociate. And I had this one moment that I always share with people that this I work in this whole environment and power dynamics, and I was the bottom of the totem pole. There was a whole audience, and the top of the totem pole person called something out and asked me and two other people in front of everyone, "Aren't you embarrassed?" And the other two people immediately got offended and as probably a lot of people would, but because I was so like numb and like just dissociated, I just kind of like listened to it, but I didn't even receive it. Like it was like I don't want to say the lights are on but no one's home, but that's kind of what it felt like. It's hard to describe if you've never felt it. And I took that question and I just kind of sat with it and I was like, why don't I have any feelings toward this? And for weeks, I would go home on the way back and from work and ask myself that question, are you embarrassed about it? Do you want to be embarrassed about it? If you do want to be embarrassed about it, what do you want to be embarrassed about? Why do you want to be embarrassed? And all of a sudden it became like instead of their question to put me down or to attack me or to humiliate me or to shame me, it now became my question that was mine, that I was actually genuinely asking myself. And finally, after like a few weeks of asking myself the question, I had the answer. And it was yes, I do want to be embarrassed. I do want to be the type of doctor that knows the smallest detail about her patient because I want to be able to provide the most excellent care. And that was my answer. But the difference was, it was my answer. I created space unknowingly. I didn't know what I was doing back then. But I created that space between stimulus and response, between the like, attack, you could say, or the shame or whatever, to response of like, yes, I do want to be embarrassed. That was a space I created by asking myself the question. I took ownership of the question. It wasn't made to humiliate me. It was truly made with my own curiosity. And I found my own answer. And I realized that, like, oh, how powerful are we in making meaning of life? Like this situation that happened, I could have been offended and angry and didn't like this person and, be trying to run away from this person and judge them and have a terrible time and like also probably learn nothing about myself. Or I could create space and decide, how do I want to respond? How do I want to, as you were asking Lily earlier, how do you grow from these things? How do you leverage it? And to me, it really comes down to those two simple things. The first one we've talked about, which is observing the thoughts, like not buying into these stories of identity or circumstance, but really observing our beliefs. And the second one is creating space to choose. And I really believe that's where our power comes from, is when we choose. And that power can sometimes be invisible. No one, like, if I would have said, yes, I want to be embarrassed, it could be because why? This person, let's say, shamed me, there was something wrong, and yes, I feel ashamed of myself, I feel embarrassed. I don't think there's a lot of growth in that, but all you see is the outside person saying yes. On the other hand, when I took the time to create space and to respond intentionally, be curious with myself, have some purpose in it, have a mission in it, come out the other end feeling like I could be better, I have belief in myself, the answer is still yes. But on the, you don't know that inside journey that each person goes on. And I think that's the invisible game that is the most important, the most powerful, but the one that no one can see, which is why these conversations are so important. And I think I just want to remind the listeners that truly I believe that their power begins and is always within them. That's something that no one can take away from any of us. And I'm not saying or suggesting that we should stay in unhealthy or unsafe situations. But what I am saying is, like, we don't have to wait for the world to change, for the confidence to be there, for the, you know, person to be there, for the situation to change. We have the agency and the power to be the change, to create the change, even while those circumstances exist. And that is where I find that that imposter can be a gift, if we allow it to, if we choose it to, that no experience goes wasted unless we allow it to be wasted, that we, as you were saying before, can find a gift in it and can leverage it to our own growth, to our own depth, to the life that we're proud of, that we want to come back to. But we are also the only ones who can give that to ourselves, you know, through being aware of it, through contemplating it, through bringing our own choice into the equation.
Thank you. And what positive thing did you notice about yourself as a result of having imposter syndrome? For example, for me, I noticed I'm a warrior. I'm like a soldier, you know, like, and I have this unlimited capacity to kind of like, yes, sometimes I go through depression. Sometimes I spend days doing a lot. But once I have this awareness of, okay, I need to move now, and then I become this soldier, this warrior, this person with unlimited power and strength and resilience and creativity. And then I'm back, baby. So, like, what's your positive thing that you noticed about yourself as a result of having imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I love that you shared that, Lily. That's beautiful. I think the honest truth is really the positive thing from imposter syndrome that I learned is that I learned our agency, our choice. I learned that it's always with us. As I was saying, like it I felt like this was trying to throw a stone at me, but the stone, instead of like me, it hit the, now I have a choice. I can either stumble over it because I know it was supposed to trip me, or I can pause and say, no, that's just a stone on the floor. I get to choose if I want to step up and rise on it. So I think that the imposter syndrome gave me a window into a relationship with myself. And through that, I am still learning how to nurture that relationship with myself, with love, with compassion, with possibility, with endless like excitement for life and for who I want to be and how I want to contribute, knowing that I'll never erase the fear and the judgment and all of the parts of life. But none of those uncomfortable parts of life are bad. Just because they're uncomfortable doesn't mean they're bad. And so I think it allowed for a lot more wholeness and a lot more presence, because I wasn't trying to run and escape from certain parts of me. I was inviting them more fully as my guides to even more of me. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, yeah. Do you feel that way with your podcast journey? Like, now that you've done 5, looking back from the beginning one to now, how do you feel it's impacted your journey with imposter syndrome?
So, you know, when I started the first podcast, I just knew it was going to be a big success. And I can't say that it has been a big success yet, but I just see it as a big success. Now, I thought I was going to be awesome, okay, from the very beginning, because I have a lot of speaking training, okay? But what I realized in hindsight is that there are still certain aspects that I'm not doing well. And that's the thing that I'm looking with a judgmental, like, for example, I still haven't mastered how do you ask the question in a way that, okay, when you're speaking, okay, how do I manage so that the next question is like on my mind, but not, you know, like, where do I look for that so that it doesn't look like I'm not interested in what you have to say? And also, like, how do I look for that? And what timing so that, again, I'm looking interested in you have to say, you know, so I'm there's still certain I know I'm failing at, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's still certain details, like, for example, because I've suffered from sore throat and I still haven't healed it, mm-hmm. I have to regularly mute myself. And when I mute myself, then I have to look to the sign of where the muting button is. And then I'm looking like I'm not interested in what you have to say. So it's like a challenge. Okay. Yeah. And then I've had some friends look at my podcasting. And again, they're noticing these little details that I know about, but I don't have a solution for. Okay. But I have recently found a way to kind of like add like a teleprompter to the top of the screen. So occasionally that helps me to optimize the, you know, the entire situation. And I know I'm not there yet. Like, I know maybe I'm 90% there. Okay. So you can say that what I expected and what has happened is not quite where I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Because I also thought I was going to do like 2,500 podcasts, you know, in 1 year. And wow. I did only like 700 in a year and a half, you know, which is a lot lower. And
wow.
So you can say, in a sense, I disappointed myself. But in another, you know, I think it's okay. And I'm now focusing on how do I optimize distribution and how do I optimize a lot of the different, you know, elements of like the actual interviewing and a lot of different things. And then I can go back to growing the volume as well. So I can't say that the imposter syndrome has impacted me that much in terms of the podcasting thing, because I always saw it with the light of it's great. It's a great idea. And overall, it has been an amazing thing for me. And not doing it, I mean, it would have been a terrible thing. So definitely overall, it's magnificent. Like, I'm very proud of it. There are a lot of different elements that can be optimized. And, you know, I'm sure that with time, I will get there. But there are a few things that have come my way that I haven't leveraged. Like one guy who has distribution to hundreds of millions of people, specifically for the podcast, he talked to me about it and I haven't closed the deal and I haven't reached out, you know?
Yeah.
And like related to this imposter syndrome that I have, thinking like, oh, it's not going to be enough because I didn't look at the side of the screen, because I didn't do this, because I was coughing, because I was muting myself, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
And now I'm like finding a way to kind of cope with it so that I can actually close that deal. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people that are maybe looking at my viewers now, they're thinking, okay, she doesn't have a lot of views, or she doesn't have a lot of this or that, a lot of that, you know, like literally the whole thing could change in 1 month.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Because you believe it can, because it's possible, because you're allowing the possibility. And I think it's like, you know, sometimes it's like we get frustrated at our inadequacies and we judge them so much and they shut us down. But I like to try to challenge myself to actually be like, give them thanks, which I know kind of sounds weird, but it's like, sometimes I'll think like fear is a lot. I always get scared of stuff. And then I think, you know what? Thank you, fear. Because without the fear, how would I ever really know the full courage that I have? You know what I mean? Like, I want to be a courageous person, a heart-led person, a person that impacts the world. I'm not going to do that by being safe and boring and, you know, like not taking risks. So even though the fear is there, it's like, wow, fear, you are the exact vehicle I need to have the most impact that I can. Because someone with impact is a risk taker. Someone with impact says it anyways. Someone with impact, you know, lives it anyways, even with the fear. So it's like the fear actually makes it the thing that makes it iconic. The fear is the thing that makes it unforgettable, you know? So it's like, I like to challenge myself, like, am I making this a problem? Or is it actually just a beautiful part of the story or an ally to the end same? And yeah, I think another thing that you said is like, I judge the podcast because I look to the side or I look at these other things. But no, I would also just like entertain like the power of your listener. You know, if you, Lily, are a beautiful person who has this vision for herself, for her life. And you can see it in the way your lipstick is and the red color of your outfits and the way that you present yourself. And that doesn't, like, because you look to the side or whatever else it is that you see, that doesn't take away any of your power for me, for the viewer. Like, I would still find you just as charismatic as a host, you know? So I think there's also this, and we've been talking a lot about external judgments versus the truth versus internal. And maybe just another interesting place to contemplate, like, is it really about what it looks like on paper, on the outside as the performance? Or is it, can people feel the truth of like, I'm in this conversation. Yeah, okay, I look to the side sometimes, but you know, I have this thoughtful question, I have this thoughtful response, etc. Your speaking skills, you know, are so effortless. Like that, you know, like just be interesting to for you to, I think, contemplate how all the beautiful ways that you are who you, judgments of the little things that you want to continue to fix, which is also beautiful. Without those, we wouldn't keep growing. I'm not saying that they're bad or that we should let them go. They're beautiful guides on our journey. And how can we fully, like, how you're saying, just proud of all that you've done. 720 episodes? That's incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Yes. Okay. I have a gift for your audience. It is at soulshine.global/podcast gift. And it's all one word, podcast gift, just like it sounds. It's a little activation for self-trust that I thought would support our conversation today. And yeah, that's my website, soulshine.global. Same for Instagram. It's at soulshine_global. And yeah, if any of your listeners found this to be helpful, I would love to support them on their journey to more self-trust and seeing more satisfaction and aliveness in their life. I'm always happy to work with groups or private, but coaching is the way that I serve the world when I'm not in the hospital, for women to be more in love with their lives exactly as it is without having to change anything. And if they want to change something, it comes from desire and from freedom, not from fixing.
Thank you.
Heal Podcast with Lily Patrascu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.